From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I know it feels like we just planted the vegetable garden moments ago, but a close look around as summer really takes hold quickly reminds us that our work is never done. Some crop or other is reaching the end of its run, making room for a succession sowing of more of that same thing or something else altogether, or maybe of a weed-suppressing, soil-building cover crop, some of which are actually edible too in what's perhaps the cleverest season-extending scheme of all. Mastering the art of stretching the harvest season is my topic today with Doug Muller of Hudson Valley Seed Company. So more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, WhiteFlowerFarm.com.
Doug Muller is co-founder and managing director of Hudson Valley Seed Company, a mail-order seed business and retail store based on its organic farm in Accord, New York, and I'm pleased to welcome him to the program today for some inspiration on succession sowing and creative cover cropping because, yes, there's still time for lots more possibilities out there. How are you, Doug?
Hey, Margaret. I'm good. How are you?
Okay. It's such a pleasure to speak to you.
Likewise.
And boy, from the first days when I knew you and Kay, when you founded Hudson Valley Seed to today, the business has evolved so much. That retail store is just wow.
Well, thank you. Yeah. It's been a journey. We're in year 18 now. We started in 2008 and we started, you know, based in our, at our home in our, in a field adjacent to our home. It was like an acre in size. And, yeah, now we have our a new place, and it's we've got a retail shop, we've got greenhouses, we've got 40 acres of land to work with. So I feel very lucky that we've made it this far. And you know, as in any business, there's lots of ups and downs. So so it's been fun. You know, COVID and the pandemic brought like a real huge wave of interest in gardening. And
yeah,
it's cooled a bit since then, so there's been a lot of adjusting. But yeah. It's, I feel very fortunate, and it's been a real, really interesting career.
Yeah, and I got one of the emails, you know, that comes from Hudson Valley Seed the other day, and I think it was mentioning to people that about your fall seedling sale of transplants. Speaking
yes.
of, you know, keeping the harvest going and, you know, not leaving any space empty, you know, using every square inch and so forth, so that people in the area can, I guess, place an order and then they come pick it up for those of us who forgot to sow our own transplants.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, you know, we certainly understand, we are gardeners too, you know, so, and we have busy lives and we understand that, you know, you get their spring garden in, it can sometimes be feel a little intimidating to kind of keep going. But the reality is that it's like truly some of the best harvests you do from your garden are in the fall from crops started around this time of year and later. So we have the greenhouses stay open and we do a pre-order also for people who know that they are not going to have time to do that second round of sowing and caretaking of specifically of crops that like to be transplanted more than direct sown.
Right.
You know, things like broccoli and whatnot. So.
Yeah. And I'll give information about all of that with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. And also just to say, obviously you and I are both in New York. We're in zone, what, like 6A-ish or something like that.
Yeah. I think we're 6B here, but
I'm 6A across the river from you. So people in different areas, of course, can also do the things that we're talking about, but the timing is going to be different. And with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com, I'll also give some links to some calendars, so to speak, for other areas of the country, like from, you know, Clemson University or University of Florida and things like that, so that people can get tuned into when to do what for their area. So forgive us for being Northeasterners. Anyway, so to keep the vegetable garden producing, which it can even in our northern location for many months to come, we kind of have to learn a little bit of a different version of the seed starting calendar timing idea than the one we use in like late winter or spring. Yeah, I mean, we have to sort of adjust our thinking, don't we?
Yes, absolutely. A few key things to keep in mind about that. So when you start seeds later, like this time of year or later, it's around the solstice now, just after the solstice. The young plants are going to be encountering pretty different conditions from what they find in the spring. In the spring, the days are warming and lengthening as the plant grows along, which kind of speeds up their growth overall. As we move onto the other side of the solstice, conditions are already warm in nearly all locations, but daylight will actually start to decrease over the coming months. And one effect of that on young plants is that they, not so much right now, but as we go deeper into the summer towards fall, is that they do take longer to reach the same size as a comparable spring-grown plant because the day length of the days as they grow gets shorter and shorter,
Right.
which just leads to less growth per day. So this is something to keep in mind as you approach like a summer seed starting schedule as opposed to a late winter, early spring one.
Right. And I've, some people have told me, oh, I add, they look at the days to maturity on the packet, which of course isn't exactly precise because it's typically means like maybe the first the first thing that might be harvestable, and the thing might be harvestable over weeks or whatever, so it's not the exact science anyway, but they kind of add a week or two, for the later sowings, or do you know what I mean? They
Definitely. Yeah, I've heard 10 days and used 10 days myself as a guide. Absolutely.
So let's just give some ideas. I mean, people are looking around the garden and if they weren't doing already successions of things, if they weren't doing, a short row of lettuce every however often, some people do it every week, every 10 days, every 2 weeks, whatever. Definitely that's petered out by now. Or the peas that we sowed in the spring, the minute that the summer heat comes on, they usually give up by, well, for me, around July, typically sometime, they stop producing, but I'd like to have peas again, or, et cetera. There's lots of possibilities. So what are some of the ones that you kind of say to people, hey, if you're getting started with this or, tune into this idea, what are some good ideas?
Well, to me, there's kind of a few buckets of possibilities. One would be like what I kind of think of as the most exciting kind of last chance, the crops that work in succession sowing settings, and those would be the ones that you would do more in the June, July timeframe here in the Northeast. Things like cucumbers, summer squash, basil, bush beans. I think the window to plant things that are frost tender, which all of those things are, is tighter than the window for doing things that are more hardy. So that first bucket of stuff is if you have some lettuce that comes out around this time of year or early July, it's still not too late and here in the Hudson Valley at least to do cucumbers or summer squash, things that actually are fruiting. Which is kind of fun to know that like here we are past the main spring season, but there are still fruiting frost tender crops that you can plant. And one of the reasons is that those crops you are harvesting immature fruit, at the edible stage. So they have a faster days to maturity than for example, like a winter squash
Right, of
or a pepper,
course. Right, right.
that's like the first bucket is kind of those fun things that it's your really almost like a it feels like a gift to have a second round to do these
And
frost tender
you really
things.
want to jump on those because,
Absolutely.
right, that's it's not they're not so forgiving as, say, arugula.
Absolutely. Totally.
Right.
Then that second bucket would include things like arugula. So these are crops that are they tend to be on the green and leafy side of things,
Yeah.
or on the root side of things. And those have a bit more of extended planting window. Those typically in the Northeast, there are crop seeds of greens can be sown, into September. Seeds of things like carrots and beets can be sown through like early to mid-August. So there's a longer window for those frost-hardy vegetable crops. And harvest on those crops would be later than for the frost tender. So for cucumbers, summer squash, that sort of thing, you'd imagine harvesting those from a mid-season sowing like this in the like September, October up till frost kind of
Right.
time frame. And
And you
then
might have to get out a piece of fabric if it gets a little chilly sometimes. You might want a little, that kind of thing.
definitely. Yeah, and in particular, if you have an early frost, like if you cover it with row cover, you might earn yourself 2 to 4 more weeks of harvest, so definitely worth having on hand. The greens and roots and things, you sort of those are so, they're like a backbone of the garden. They're just you can really have greens available the entire year. So from midsummer to early September type sowings of those crops, you can expect to be harvesting in the October through December kind of time frame. And again, not a bad idea to have some protective fabric on hand for those crops as well, but not for they don't need it in when the first frost comes. They need it from Thanksgiving till the end of the year kind of time, if you want to extend your harvest into winter.
That makes sense.
And then one other additional bucket that's always in my mind is, as you mentioned in the intro, sort of cover crops you can eat.
I
And cover
was
crops generally, but in particular the cover crops you can eat.
I'm totally fascinated by this because you had kind of alerted me to some of these, and I've seen, I don't know whether it's on the website or I can't remember, but I was like, really? And I just, how did I not know about some of these ideas?
Well, that's all good. They're not part of our gardening culture so much, but one of them I think really should be, which is the winter hardy field pea, formerly known as Austrian winter peas. We had to change our name because the USDA reached out to us. There was some sort of naming law that came into effect for this particular crop, but it is a variety of pea, like Pisum sativum, and it's a but it has the characteristic that it is very cold hardy and winter hardy. And so the sort of planting cycle or planting cycle for that is that you put them in the ground in the sort of July, August, early September kind of time frame. They grow into young plants, sort of like adolescent plants. They overwinter like that, so they just sort of go dormant for the bulk of the winter. And then in March or April, whenever here in the Northeast, they regrow again vigorously, and they provide really tasty pea shoots at the time of year when there's not much else green, coming out of the garden with that force. It's really, if you have a even a relatively small bed of them, you can be harvesting pea shoots for like big bunches of pea shoots for a few weeks, and they're very tasty. And so it's the other benefit of that is that it's leguminous, so it's adding nitrogen to your soil throughout that whole process and suppressing weeds.
And because you sell organic seed for these field peas, it is an edible. I mean, it is something that I want to grow and eat. You know what I mean? It's that's the other thing is I would want I with something like a quote cover crop, I don't want a treated seed. I don't want it. Do you know what I mean? If I'm going to eat
Yeah, for
it,
sure.
I don't want to get some like agricultural version of it that who knows what's. Sorry to sound paranoid,
No, it's all
but.
good. Yeah, I would say it's not only it's sort of it's that, yes, and also it's I think there are other cover crops like regular field peas, which you grow during the season. Those aren't as cold hardy. Those make shoots too, but they're like okay. They're not actually, you wouldn't choose to eat those, but the necessarily if you had some other good vegetables around. The winter peas, the winter hardy peas, are legitimately good, those pea shoots. So that's one of the cool things, that it is a cover crop. It behaves like a cover crop. It fills an empty space quickly and does good stuff to the soil, and also produces something like genuinely tasty in the spring. So it's one of my favorite
And do you
cover
just
crop.
cut it down, or what do you do? Because I mean, in many of us in our home vegetable garden, it's not like in a farm field.
Sure.
It's a confined space. So the aftercare management of a cover
Yeah.
crop is a little trickier. So,
Yeah.
I know people who like cut it down either with a weed whacker or some, or just sometimes with head shears, and then cover it with a tarp, or whatever, or loosen the soil a little, cover it with a tarp, let it sort of degrade for a couple of few weeks or something before replanting the area. I don't know, people have different tactics.
That tactic should work for the pea shoots or the field peas are not particularly like with something like winter rye, for example, which is a common cover crop in a field setting that's done in the fall to be a winter cover. It's really hard to get rid of it in the spring. Like it takes you have it's like an actual tillage to get rid of it. The field peas are not like that, so they're much easier. The root system is much more like even just with a hoe, you can like if you have like a garden bed that you have in that cover, like if you yeah, you could like weed whack it and then just with a very light hoeing, you would take care of it.
That's good to know, because I think that's one of the things when we say the expression cover crops, it sounds, a little agricultural. And if
Definitely.
people have tried something like winter rye in, they're in their the confines of their raised bed garden or
That's
something, they're
yeah.
like, uh-oh, now I'm in
Yeah, for
trouble.
sure.
What
Definitely.
device does fixes this?
Yeah, like probably yeah, I don't know that there is one
No, there
necessarily. That's
isn't
just
one
a
except for backbreaking hard
it,
work.
totally. Yeah.
Yeah, no, so that's tricky. So that's a good one. So these the overwintering types,
Yes.
they also are they're tasty, and they're easy to manage this way. Plus, as you say, they put nitrogen in the soil and so forth.
Yeah, and then another sort of a crop that you can treat as a cover crop, but is not technically a cover crop, although the relatives of it are. Basically, there's a bunch of fast-growing brassicas, like in the Brassica rapa species, things like komatsuna or mustard greens or bok choy, tatsoi. They're very like komatsuna in particular. I'll highlight, which is just very fast-growing. And if you sow it densely in an empty bed, it germinates within a couple of days, and it just grows so quickly, even in the like diminishing light conditions and cooler weather of the fall, that it can really just blanket a bed in basic this delicious, mildly mustardy, edible green. So it doesn't, what it's, it has the effect of kind of weed suppression because it can blanket the bed so readily, even though it's a cultivated crop, and it's not technically a cover crop. It just behaves like one enough that it's another example of a kind of have your cake and eat it too situation where you're suppressing weeds, sort of stabilizing a bed and like for a period of time when another crop might be out of it. But you also get like a really delicious and abundant harvest, and they really do keep growing steadily, even without row cover protection, into the cold. So here in the Northeast, you can easily be harvesting komatsuna into November, no problem, with some protection into December, no problem. The one thing is, it's not necessarily unlike the winter hardy peas. Komatsuna or other Brassica rapa mustard greens are not going to be adding nitrogen to your soil. In fact, they'll be extracting it because they're leafy green vegetables. So, but they do suppress weeds. And if you, as long as you're, next spring putting down compost and fertility into the bed, there's, it's not a problem or anything. So.
And if you leave an area empty, we know what happens, and the weeds
Yes.
that happen also take up the nitrogen.
Absolutely.
So in
Yes.
other words, and then require eradication. So,
Yeah.
I find, because a lot of times when I've top dressed my vegetable beds with compost, I compost kind of in a big open pile, a windrow, as they would say, big open pile. And you know what? It's not hot enough, probably. Okay, so it's not killing all the seeds of everything. So I get stuff in there, and I have to be conscious about that. That if I leave areas empty, stuff's going to sprout, right? I'm going to get, yeah. And And I don't, that's not so good either. So Kamatsuna sounds like a good idea to me.
Yeah, no, it really does outcompete a lot of weeds. I mean, that's what you're looking for, is
Yes.
sort of a level of vigor that can keep pace with the level of vigor of weeds. So
Yes. Yes.
Komatsuna definitely provides that, as does like mustard greens, other varieties in that species.
Okay. So for succession sowing, I wanted for the last like 4 or 5 minutes, I want to talk about some other go sort of go back to sort of some of the crops we can do.
Sure.
And I don't know if we talked about bush beans, but I love bush beans,
Yeah.
and that's one where you can keep going for quite a while, I think. That's I think a good one.
The nice thing about bush beans is that they yield much more quickly than pole beans.
Yes.
I love pole beans in a garden because
So do I.
there's less bending over. They yield like steadily from when they begin producing until frost, as long as you stay on top of harvesting. So they're, I mean, I'm a huge fan of pole beans, but there comes a moment in the season when it's kind of too late for them. But bush beans you can still plant because they flower and set beans like much more quickly than a pole bean does. So typically here in the Northeast, you can continue sowing bush beans to like mid-July, I would say. And you'll still get like a nice harvest in the fall. And it feels like it's like a nice, I enjoy having green beans at that time of year. It's a nice counterpoint to so many of the other crops coming in, like as we move towards winter squash and carrots and things like it's and greens. It's its own category that a lot of people have a big wave of bush beans from the seeds they planted in May. And that wave happens in sort of July into early August before the tomatoes are even ready. And it's so I love doing a follow-up to have it sort of keeps beans present with green beans present with the rest of the vegetables that are in abundance later into the September, October timeframe.
And I speaking of the sort of non-vining choice that you just said about bush beans versus pole beans, I do the same with the peas for fall. I would not use a tall variety. I'd use a short variety that matures more quickly. Do you know what I
Yes.
mean?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea because the one challenge with you can do peas for the fall, which is something a lot of people don't realize, but one of the challenges is that they don't love like being young plants during the heat and humidity.
No.
They really don't. And you can see it on the how they behave. They often grow through it and start to flourish once we move into late August and later. But I think that's a great strategy to go with a faster maturing, smaller, lower growing pea plant that doesn't need as many days to mature. So it doesn't have to suffer through that through that
Right.
hot weather as much. You can plant it a bit
Right.
later. Yeah.
Right. And we should always remember to in this sort of calculation where we're looking at what's going to come empty. And I think it's good to write it down. I mean, to walk around the garden right about now, in fact, right now before it gets any later, and sort of say, ah, that's going to be done in a week or two, or that's going to be done in August 1st, and that's and sort of make our updated calendar, so to speak, of what's going to go where. Not to forget that we're going to leave room for things like our garlic, which is going to go in last of all, right? Things for next year. That too. What about are there a couple of herbs like cilantro? Can we keep doing that? Because that peters out. That doesn't last long.
For
Can we
sure.
keep doing
Cilantro is
that?
a great candidate for succession sowing generally. Even, we have a couple of varieties in our catalog, one that's a longer, slower to bolt, variety. Those are called Caribe.
Right.
That's a great one, but even with that variety, I mean, you get like 4 weeks of harvest instead of two. It's not it won't necessarily last the season. So you do need to keep sowing cilantro if you'd like to have it after the first wave, because it naturally just tends to bolt and then form the coriander, flowers, and then yields the seed, which is coriander. And cilantro is a great choice too because it's cold hardy. You can
Oh.
yeah you can I've grown wonderful cilantro crops in my like winter vegetable tunnel, like through the winter with very
Oh.
little protection. They get kind of like they flatten down a little bit and spread out, I think, as a response to the cold. But they're absolutely alive and harvestable. So it's a good one to keep doing because, unlike basil, it can stand the cold.
Okay. Well, Doug Muller, I'm so glad to speak to you, and you're motivating me, and I see
Okay.
Kamatsuna in my future.
Fabulous.
yeah, so happy sort of summer.
Thank you.
And
Likewise, Margaret. Take care.
I hope I'll talk to you again soon. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening and succession sowing meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, HighMowingSeeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, WhiteFlowerFarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of AwayToGarden.com and RobinHoodRadio.com.